Hello, my name is Lily, and today I will be reading the Attleboro Sun Chronicle, published on June 11th, 2026. And our first article is written by Stephen Peterson, titled, Foxboro Officials Say Town is Set to Host FIFA World Cup Games Starting Saturday. After months of planning, town officials say Foxboro is ready to host the biggest sporting event in the world starting Saturday, but they are advising residents to expect disruptions. The first of seven World Cup matches at Gillette Stadium, which will be called Boston Stadium during the FIFA tournament, kicks off at 9 p.m. Saturday when Scotland faces Haiti. Foxboro is proud to serve as the host community for Boston Stadium, and our focus is on making sure match days are safe, coordinated, and well-managed for residents, visitors, businesses, and fans, Police Chief Michael Grace said. Our department has been planning closely with local, state, federal, venue, and event partners for many months. Officials said the late-night weekend start time for the first match is expected to ease traffic congestion compared with a late-afternoon weekday exhibition match in March that served as a tune-up for the tournament. The MBTA plans to run 14 special trains for each match to and from the stadium, accommodating an estimated 20,000 fans, up to about one-third of the stadium's capacity. Hundreds of buses transporting fans are also expected to reduce traffic along Route 1 and surrounding roadways in and around town. Still, officials said residents should expect heavier traffic, longer travel times, delays near Gillette Stadium, and impacts on major roads in Foxboro and neighboring communities. Match days will differ significantly from typical Patriots games, concerts, or other stadium events. Local roads are expected to see heavier-than-usual traffic heading toward the stadium, beginning as much as 4 hours before kickoff and departing traffic for up to 3 hours after the final whistle, officials said. Road closures and other traffic adjustments will begin 6 hours before kickoff and remain in place until 6 hours after the match ends. Trains are expected to run into the early morning hours for night matches, including Saturday's game. The final trains are expected to depart around 3 a.m., possibly later. Officials warned train activity could disrupt neighborhoods near the stadium. The MBTA has notified town officials that additional trains will need to idle locally before returning to Boston. The trains will idle primarily in Mansfield and Walpole, but also more frequently than usual in Foxboro, where the station near the stadium has been upgraded with an expanded platform. The trains have to stay local. It's going to be annoying, town manager Paige Duncan said. We all think we are going to learn from this. It is a fluid situation. The town has created a World Cup information page and community resource guide on its website, foxboroma.gov. Information for residents, businesses, and fans includes MBTA contact information, transportation plans, parking restrictions, public safety measures, commuter impacts, and other details. Town officials said the World Cup will have significant local impacts, and residents should not expect match days to resemble a typical day in Foxboro. Officials said town staff have been coordinating with state, regional, and federal partners on transportation, public safety, infrastructure, emergency response, and communications planning. This week, meetings were held for commercial parking lot license holders, and the State Alcoholic Beverages Control Commission conducted training sessions for alcohol servers. The police department assumed control of stadium security Tuesday. They did a full sweep, Duncan said. A wide security perimeter has been established around the stadium, and officials warned it could take fans an hour or more to pass through checkpoints. Other World Cup matches at Gillette are Tuesday, June 16th, 6 p.m., Norway vs. Iraq. Friday, June 19th, 6 p.m., Scotland vs. Morocco. Tuesday, June 23rd at 4 p.m., England vs. Ghana. Friday, June 26th at 3 p.m., Norway vs. France. Monday, June 29th at 4:30 p.m., Round of 32, Match 74. And Thursday, July 9th at 4 p.m., the quarterfinal, or match 97. This next article is written by Lauren Neergaard, titled, Health Sleuths Are Watching for Disease Threats During the World Cup. Health officials will be on high alert for germs as millions of soccer fans gather for World Cup matches. While millions of soccer fans cheer or groan over World Cup matches spanning North America, health officials will be on high alert for germs. A heat wave may be the most obvious health threat, but infectious diseases can spread in a crowd, and experts are set to scrutinize wastewater, hospital visits, even social media for any signs that an outbreak might be brewing. Measles, one of the most contagious diseases, is among the top concerns, sparking a warning this week from the Pan American Health Organization, or PAHO. With a nearly six-week stretch of packed stadiums, bars, and tourist sites in 16 cities, officials are on the lookout for a long list of infections from the stomach bug norovirus to mosquito-borne dengue fever. This is truly a marathon, said Palak Raval Nelson, Philadelphia's health commissioner. The mass gatherings come at a tense moment for budget-strapped health agencies in the U.S. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, hit hard by Trump administration staffing cuts, already was grappling with a growing Ebola outbreak in Central Africa and a cruise ship hantavirus outbreak. While CDC officials have advised state and local health departments behind the scenes, it's expected World Cup Disease Surveillance Dashboard still was in final development days before games began, according to the Department of Health and Human Services. Our public health professionals are pretty stretched, said local health specialist Rebecca Katz of Georgetown University, who is leading an unusual new hub to help. At the Health Security Operations Center, a joint effort between Georgetown and MedStar Health, workers are analyzing data from around the country so they can alert health authorities, even emergency rooms, to any early signs of trouble. The center is issuing daily situation reports about disease trends around the World Cup host cities and team base camps to several hundred local and federal public health groups, emergency management, and hospital officials, and others who've signed up. It's important that we don't become alarmist, said MedStar emergency medicine specialist Dr. Shane Kapler. We're trying to be the insurance policy. Measles is a top concern for potential World Cup spread. Already more than 2,000 people in the U.S. have come down with measles this year, nearly as many as during all of last year, according to the CDC. Patients can spread measles before the rash appears and they realize they're sick. Not too long ago, the U.S. seldom saw measles except from international travel by unvaccinated people. Now, with frequent U.S. outbreaks, actually a lot of our international partners are worried about measles being exported to them after the games, said Georgetown's Katz. Measles is spreading in Canada, too, and has exceeded 11,000 cases in Mexico, according to PAHO. It's urging soccer fans to be sure they're vaccinated, with a health campaign saying a single measles patient can spread the virus to up to 18 unprotected people. Is Ebola a concern at the World Cup? Brown University's Dr. Craig Spencer, who survived Ebola while working in the West Africa outbreak over a decade ago, said he's repeatedly asked about the risk of Ebola during the World Cup. But, quote, for me, Ebola is not the number one or number two or even number three threat. I am concerned about importation of measles. I am more concerned about the importation of other infectious threats that may not seem as scary to us as Ebola, Spencer said. Many health experts agree that the risk of Ebola spreading in the U.S. is very low. That's partly because of governmental travel screenings and restrictions on people recently in outbreak-affected areas. Moreover, Ebola spreads by contact with bodily fluids from someone showing symptoms, not through the air like measles or respiratory viruses. One fortunate thing about this virus is you're most contagious when you're really quite ill. It's not like COVID, where you could be sitting next to someone who doesn't even know they're infected and perhaps contract the virus, said Jennifer Nuzzo, director of Brown's Pandemic Center. How to spot brewing diseases. There's precedent for germs invading major sporting events. Canadian scientists linked a community measles outbreak to the 2010 Olympics in Vancouver, and clusters of norovirus had to be contained during the Olympics this year in Milan and in 2018 in South Korea. One way to detect signs of trouble: people with certain viral or bacterial infections shed genetic material that sophisticated testing of wastewater can spot. For example, measles can appear in wastewater days before an emergency room sees its first patients. This week's surveillance reports from Katz's Center note that wastewater testing recently found diarrhea causing rotavirus, hepatitis A, and norovirus in some parts of the U.S., something to watch as soccer crowds arrive. In Dallas, officials ramped up wastewater screening, including at the international airport, casting a wide net rather than looking for specific illnesses, said Dr. Phil Huang, director of Dallas County Health and Human Services. His team is also enhancing the usual mosquito testing, checking not just for West Nile virus that regularly spreads in the U.S., but for viruses more common in other countries like dengue and chikungunya. Public health officials have been preparing for months, said Philadelphia's Ravel Nelson, including with mock emergency drills and communications with counterparts around the country. I don't want to send a message that there's one key thing, she said. We have the frameworks in place to carry out what we need to do. Our next article is written by Mike Kirby, titled "Ex-Rentham Officer Decries Sentence in Son's Fatal Shooting." Richard Mayhew worked as a Rentham police officer for more than 40 years, but after what he and his family say was an unjust sentence given to the man who shot and killed his son, he is disappointed and angry. "I just question the justice system now," Mayhew said. "I'm ashamed of what it's become because I spent more than half my life helping the justice system." The Mayhew family is furious because the man who shot Jason Mayhew, a 36-year-old Rentham native and father of two, could be released after about 4 years in prison. "We're not very happy with it at all," the father said of the sentence. "It's one of those things where we don't know where to turn." Jason's sister, Joanna Rodriguez, called the sentence a slap in the face. On June 2nd, Enrique Antonio Canales Martinez, 27, pleaded guilty in Worcester Superior Court to one count of manslaughter, according to court records. Canales Martinez and Jason Mayhew lived on different floors of the same Worcester apartment building. The two men had an argument on June 21, 2025, when Mayhew went to Canales Martinez's apartment to complain about loud music. At one point during the argument, Canales Martinez brandished a semi-automatic handgun, according to court testimony. When Mayhew saw the gun, he returned to his apartment, and both men called the police. Police instructed Canales Martinez to remove the bullets from his gun and told Mayhew to remain in his apartment. Neither man complied. Richard Mayhew said Jason's fiance, Ashley During, and her two sons were inside the apartment and he did not want them involved in any confrontation, so he went outside. According to court testimony, Mayhew then argued with Canales Martinez's girlfriend and another woman. Canales Martinez later stepped outside carrying the gun. Security video from a nearby school showed Mayhew rushing toward Canales Martinez after what appeared to be shouting between the two men, Richard Mayhew said. Canales Martinez then ran, turned, and fired two shots, one striking Mayhew in the abdomen and the other in the leg, according to testimony. Police found Mayhew wounded on the sidewalk. Officers rendered aid until he was transported to UMass Memorial Medical Center, University campus, where he was pronounced dead, according to court records. Defense attorney Elliot Levine told Boston.com that Mayhew, quote, charged at him after Canales Martinez, quote, told him to stop. He also said his client regretted the tragic situation and pleaded guilty to avoid prolonging the court proceedings. "We had a viable case of self-defense," Levine said. "It was a sad set of circumstances that he regrets having happened." Richard Mayhew questioned how the incident could be considered self-defense. When you bring a gun into an argument with an unarmed man, they can't claim it's self-defense, he said. Canales-Martinez admitted to shooting Mayhew shortly after his arrest. He was initially charged with armed assault with intent to murder, assault and battery with a dangerous weapon causing serious bodily injury, assault and battery by firearm, and discharging a firearm within 500 feet of a dwelling. However, a grand jury later returned a single charge of manslaughter in a September 2025 indictment. Worcester Assistant District Attorney Joseph Simmons recommended a sentence of 14 to 16 years, while Levine asked for a 3-year sentence, according to the district attorney's office. The maximum penalty for manslaughter in Massachusetts is up to 20 years in state prison. Simmons told the family the case would be difficult to prosecute for a lengthy sentence because the defendant remained at the scene, admitted firing the gun, and cooperated with police. If he wants to plea, he could get 14 years in jail. Do I think that's right? No, but I know we're not going to get 18 to 20, Richard Mayhew said of why the family accepted the recommendation. The father was also upset that the defense raised the fact that Jason Mayhew had alcohol and marijuana in his system at the time of the altercation. However, the prosecution was not permitted to introduce evidence that Canales-Martinez had previously faced 2 restraining orders, both of which were closed, and an assault and battery charge that had been dismissed. It's like he doesn't have any rights anymore because he's dead, Richard Mayhew said. Family members submitted victim impact statements, 5 of which were read at sentencing. Quote, I feel like I've changed so much since Jason's death that I don't even recognize myself, Betsy Mayhew, Jason's mother, wrote in a statement. I am angry at times and devastated most often. I can't imagine living the rest of my life without him. On the day you chose to pull the trigger, you did not just take a life, you destroyed a family, Joanna Rodriguez said in court. You took a loving father away from his children, a son from his parents, a brother from his siblings, and a friend from countless people whose lives were made better by knowing him. Richard Mayhew said Judge Reardon made little eye contact and spoke briefly during sentencing. At one point, he said, I wish there was more I could do for you, Mayhew said. How can you say that? You could have given him a longer sentence. A graduate of King Philip Regional High School, Jason Mayhew was a heavy equipment operator who enjoyed the outdoors. An adventurous spirit, Jason found joy in all activities outdoors, his family wrote in his obituary. Whether he was skydiving, scuba diving, or simply fishing, he enjoyed the freedom and thrill that nature had to offer. He found great joy sharing his love of fishing with his 2 sons and future stepsons. He was one of a kind and could be found jamming out to music when driving, wearing pink, baseball hats, and sunglasses. He had so many. Singing karaoke and celebrating Pride Month every month, his family wrote. Mayhew is survived by his fiancée and her 2 sons. His sons, Declan and Sawyer, his father and stepmother, Pam Mayhew, his mother, his sister, a stepbrother, his grandmothers, his niece and nephew, and several aunts, uncles, and cousins. A celebration of his life will be held from noon to 4 p.m. Sunday, September 21st, at Novato's Bar and Grill in Norfolk, according to his obituary. Guests are asked to wear pink. This next article is written by Stephen Peterson, titled Franklin Resident Arrested After Multi-Town Chase, River Plunge. Police have arrested a resident with a lengthy criminal record who allegedly led police on a chase through town and neighboring Bellingham before fleeing and swimming across a river. Bellingham police officer Dan Gavin attempted to stop a Ford Ranger on Pulaski Boulevard shortly before 9 a.m. Tuesday. The vehicle was known to officers as being commonly operated by Dominic Revel, 54, of Franklin, and who has an extensive criminal history, several active warrants for his arrest, and a revoked driver's license, police said. The vehicle failed to stop, and a pursuit ensued, continuing into Franklin, where police there joined the chase. During the pursuit, stop sticks were successfully deployed on Grove Street in Franklin, deflating the vehicle's passenger side tires, police said. Despite the damage, the vehicle continued traveling through Franklin, briefly approaching the Medway town line before coming to a stop on Pond Street in Franklin. During the pursuit, the vehicle struck several mailboxes, officials said. The driver fled on foot, jumped over a fence, swam across a small river, and continued into a wooded area, police said. Franklin and Bellingham police established a perimeter and requested assistance from regional canine teams and drone operators. Canine teams from Milford and Millis police departments responded, along with drone operators from the Bellingham and Franklin police departments. The canine track led officers to a home on Partridge Street in Franklin. The address is known to law enforcement and was listed on Revel's active warrants. Officers searched the house but were unable to locate the suspect, officials said. Police later took Revel into custody and he was taken into the Bellingham police station. Bellingham police will be seeking an additional warrant charging Revel with failure to stop for police, reckless operation, operating under suspension, speeding, and multiple other motor vehicle violations. Franklin police will be seeking an additional warrant charging Revel with several motor vehicle violations, including leaving the scene of property damage and reckless operation. This next article is written by Stephen Peterson, titled Attleboro Man Arrested on Numerous Gun Drug Charges in Pawtucket. A city man has been arrested in Pawtucket on numerous drug and gun charges, as well as for assaulting a police officer and having three outstanding warrants. A Rhode Island state trooper Tuesday stopped Georgia J. Estrella, 41, of 376 Slater Street, Attleboro, while he was walking on Grace Street in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, state police said. The trooper recognized Estrella as someone who had outstanding warrants for his arrest. After a foot pursuit and physical struggle, the trooper apprehended Estrella with assistance from Pawtucket officers, state police said. Estrella was alleged to be found in possession of crack cocaine. An inventory of his backpack yielded a .22 caliber revolver, defaced, that was loaded with 5 rounds, 26 grams of crystal methamphetamine, and less than 10 grams of fentanyl, psilocybin mushrooms, LSD, clonazepam, alprazolam, and buprenorphine. Digital scales, narcotics packaging materials, narcotics packaging tools, and other narcotics paraphernalia were also recovered, police said. Estrella was charged with manufacturing/delivery/possession with intent to deliver crystal methamphetamine, fentanyl, LSD, crack cocaine, psilocybin, clonazepam, alprazolam, and buprenorphine. He was also charged with carrying a pistol or revolver without a license or permit, possession of a firearm by certain persons prohibited, carrying a firearm when committing a crime of violence, possession of a firearm while committing a controlled substance violation, alteration of marks of identification on firearms, attempted larceny over $10,000, assault on a police officer, vandalism/malicious injury to property, resisting arrest, obstructing a police officer in the execution of duty, and disorderly conduct. There were also warrants out of Providence County Superior Court for failure to appear for violation hearings on charges of manufacturing, delivery, possession with intent to deliver a Schedule 1, 2 controlled substance from East Providence and Providence Police, and failure to appear for a pre-arraignment conference on a charge of possession of a Schedule 1-4 or 1-5 controlled substance under 10 grams from Rhode Island State Police. Estrella was arraigned Tuesday in 6th District Court in Providence and held without bail. Our next article is written by Mike Kirby, titled A Ride for Life, A Pitch at Fenway. Greg Aubin will be doing something Friday night that young New Englanders would love to do. Take the mound at Fenway Park. The 49-year-old North Attleboro man will throw out the ceremonial first pitch on on Pan Mass Challenge Night at the home of the Boston Red Sox, something he says he's terrified about. Aubin has completed 12 Pan Mass Challenges, raising more than $85,000 for the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston. This August, he'll again ride 177 miles over 2 days from Worcester to Provincetown for one of the nation's leading cancer research hospitals. But the connection runs deeper. Aubin is one of more than 1,100 living proof participants in this year's Pan Mass Challenge. Riders or volunteers who were previously treated or are currently undergoing cancer treatment. In late 2024, melanoma, the deadliest form of skin cancer, was discovered during Aubin's routine dermatology exam. Treatment began quickly at Dana-Farber and continued until March of this year. I was able to see the impact that the Pan Mass has on Dana-Farber, Aubin said. From the unique position I was in, I was able to really get a picture of what the fundraising does for that community. Never a cyclist in the past, Aubin got involved with the Pan Mass Challenge when friends Peter and Don Regan of North Attleboro had one child diagnosed with leukemia, and then, 7 years later, a second child developed Ewing's sarcoma. He joined friends riding the Pan Mass Challenge, and the children are now cancer-free. Aubin joined a PMC team and got hooked on cycling. That was especially important last year when he still participated in the Pan Mass Challenge, though taking a shorter route while undergoing treatment for melanoma. When team jerseys were handed out last August, Aubin was surprised to see his picture on one. "That was special for me last year," he said. We're definitely a close-knit group." Now this article continues on a bit longer, but that is all the time that we have for today's reading of Attleboro's The Sun Chronicle newspaper, published on June 11th. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for listening to the Talking Information Center. Have a wonderful rest of your day.